This is 16.9, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 11 years now, first online and now as a podcast. We cover what's new and interesting, and we filter out all the BS. This podcast gives listeners a chance to hear at length from people and companies who are making a real mark in the industry with new ideas or just old-fashioned hard work and smarts. You can listen to episodes online, get it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to pull down the RSS feed. We now have a companion podcast called Projects, hosted by my longtime industry friend Michael Tutton. That show is all about digging deep on the creative and tech behind some landmark projects. 16.9 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. OneLand has been around the digital signage market for many, many years, but the company is far better known on its UK home turf and in other parts of the world than it is in North America. That's changing as OneLand starts to build into the US and Canada with a really well-respected software and hardware solution, as well as what Hugh Coghill-Smith calls the WRAP. That's the company's managed services piece. Coghill-Smith is OneLand's longtime sales and marketing director. He sat down with me at ISE back in February to talk about the company's past and present, how they work with jumbo clients like Dubai Duty Free, and the big spike OneLand is seeing in the meeting room signs market. So for people who may not know OneLand, maybe give me the background on the company.
Yes, so OneLand began in 2000, and like any startup, it started in the garage at home, but very rapidly grew from those small beginnings.
And did it start as a software company?
We started as a software company, yes, and very rapidly decided we would also begin to do our own hardware as well, so that we could bring together the best of the two breeds to deliver an appliance. Therefore gave us more reliability, more control over the total solution.
It was a sanity exercise that you absolutely knew what you had, as opposed to a vendor saying, oh, we don't make that anymore.
Well, exactly. So instead of having two people to worry about if there's a problem, you know, is it the hardware problem, is it the software problem, we were controlling the whole thing. And we began working in the Linux area, of course, to get that kind of reliability. So we're owning the whole stack.
Right.
And that then gave us the ability to control the product completely and achieve the reliability for which OneLand is now renowned with its digital signage systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were you starting with a particular vertical in mind? Like, were you guys servicing airlines or something or other?
No. Actually, right back in the beginning, our original target market was the corporate world. Yeah. Where we saw that there would be this need to communicate with employees. And in fact, that we looked at digital signage and room booking right away back then as well, and dabbled a bit in the room signage then as well. But then very quickly, what took off for us was the digital signage part back in the early 2000s, and the company grew very, very rapidly. But it wasn't just corporate signage that took off, it was also education.
Oh, okay.
I think that was something quite unique about the UK market at the time. I don't think you would have seen that in Germany, for example. I don't think you do today, really, see a lot of digital signage in education in Germany, say. But in the UK, that really absolutely took off and became a key focus for the company for a while. I think pretty much every school in the UK now has digital signage.
And what do they do? And what's on those screens?
Obviously, the schools and the universities are using them to communicate to the students what is going on, the timetabling, where to go, what to do, and obviously sharing the results of the activities within the school or within the university. Mm-hmm. Actually, I mean, for example, the content that we're showing here today on our stand at ISE, we're showing content from Warwick University for their new Oculus building. And that's a fantastic new building. It's using reserver room signage throughout all of the meeting room spaces. But obviously when you go into the foyer, you've got to start by knowing where to go. So they've got some 4K screens there, 5 4K screens in portrait, driven by the OneLand players. And that video wall at the entrance is welcoming everybody into the building, but it's also giving them the wayfinding of where to go. And it's integrated with the reserver room summary, so we've got like a flight board of which meetings are happening next or which lectures are happening next. And the key part with, say, a university there is that yes, okay, they're using maybe Office 365 or something like that to arrange their meeting room spaces. But they're also having a timetabling system. So OneLAN has done the integration with Scientia Syllabus Plus, who have a very high market share in the university space in UK, and I think nearly 100% down in Australia. So we identified them very early on with Reserva as being a key partner for us.
Right.
And so that enables us to bring all of that detailed timetabling information out and to show that to students. Mm-hmm. So the students know where to be on time, hopefully, for their lectures.
Yeah. No excuse, at least one excuse they can use.
But Warwick have gone beyond that. They've used our system to not only show the students what's happening now and where to go, they're also very interested in the eco and sustainability factors as well for a new building. So, for example, that new building has got solar panels on the top and is generating its own electricity, feeding back into the grid. Mm. So they're showing that on the video walls. Yeah, they're showing the students and in a meaningful way that they can understand. You know, how many cups of tea, as it were, would be consumed today, and also how much electricity we've been generating, how much water we're using.
So is it showing live data?
Live data. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Absolutely. So we're very frequently doing that actually with the universities. They're trying to bring out live data. Mm-hmm. For example, with another university's. We were bringing out the information about what computers are available, what workstations are available on different floors, so students can immediately see where they could go and work.
Right.
So, So the education market has been a very good market for OneLAN. It's also a very natural market for room signage for us. But then, obviously, with pretty much every school in the UK and university adopting digital signage, and now, of course, we're in booking. OneLAN then we started to look further afield, and obviously we started exporting, which was my original role 8 years ago when I joined the company, was to really open up OneLAN's export side. And what we found was in 1 or 2 years that actually I was finding a lot of success selling into completely different areas. So mainly retail and hospitality as well. So that really saw us start developing the product to meet the needs of those customers as well. Mm. With customers like Dubai Duty Free, who's been our customer now for 4 years.
And that's like the biggest duty free in the world,
that
right?
is pretty much one of the busiest, well, it's by value of goods sold, I believe it is now the busiest and most profitable duty free in the world, yes.
Yeah, the one at the airport, they like there's a lot going on those screens, right?
Yeah, so obviously they're an advertising network, but they're also selling the products.
Right.
So one of the beauties for Dubai Duty Free is that they can go to the cosmetic company or the perfume company or Johnny Walker whiskey or whoever, and they can say, well, look, put your content onto our network. We'll put it in the right places within the airport that's near to where your product's been sold. And then we can come back and show you the results before, after.
Right.
And that's really been very successful. So they're able to go back to these advertisers and say, look, here's a 10 to 50% increase in the net sales for your product.
Yeah.
And there's also a very interesting halo effect that they found. So whilst you were advertising, they were driving more sales. Mm-hmm. But actually then they found even when they took the advertising off the screens, there was still an increase in sales. And they were a bit puzzled about this. Why, we're not advertising.
Right.
Why are we selling more of that cosmetics or perfume? And the answer is what they call the halo effect. So they interviewed staff, and what they found was that the staff that were helping customers, because it had been really popular in the previous month, were still remembering that and still helping customers to say, well, look, this has been really popular last month.
It's constant reinforcement all around.
Absolutely.
Even if they're not standing staring at it, they can't help but get it into their brains.
Exactly, yeah.
If I'm remembering something I heard about those stores, you're using data from arrivals and departures to tune the marketing according to the demography of the particular flights, right?
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, a huge target market for Dubai Duty Free is obviously people coming from China with their marketing, with their dollars to buy products. And so they really wanted to make sure that they were targeting those people correctly. So that means knowing the flight schedules for the flights coming in, say, from China, and making sure that you're actually showing advertising for the products in Chinese at those times in the locations in the airport right. where they're going to be transiting.
And would the product mix change according to the different
flights? So definitely the advertising mix changes throughout the day, in association with matching up to those flight schedules.
Right. Using real-time data, I've talked to a lot of companies about this. It all seems like a natural thing for them to do, but I don't see that much of it happening. Is it difficult to get the client to understand the value of this and to expose the data that they need to expose, or how is it working?
I think that I think clients see the benefit definitely in having highly targeted, hyper-targeted content, mm-hmm. yes. Whether they want to make that fully dynamic or not is a secondary question. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think in our work with Barclays Bank in the UK, they wanted to be hyper-targeted in the local branch. So they did their detailed research about each branch. So they know a lot of data about each branch. They know who works in that branch. They know who is the mortgage assistant in that branch and that he's there on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Right.
So they know very detailed information, and they know very detailed information not only about the branch's capabilities, in terms of it's got a mortgage advisor there on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, but they also know the mix of the customers coming up here. So they've married all that up in order to then say, well, we're going to show the picture of Frank, the mortgage advisor, who is actually in the store today, and you can fix a meeting with him. So they're trying to really reintroduce the personal relationship into banking,
right.
which kind of got a bit lost with the move to internet banking. And
right.
they felt in their market research had shown that they were becoming a faceless company, and customers
right.
were losing their relationship with them. I remember back in the day, I had a bank manager and I knew who he was.
Right.
And people kind of wanted a bit more of that again. So this program for their digital signage was really around doing that again, mm-hmm. reintroducing the human face
so, to their So the clusters. Scheduling was pretty much informed and shaped by metadata that
exactly.
they had on
so
each branch?
Exactly. So all that metadata goes into our content management system. So mm-hmm. when you're looking at how that branch, the players in that branch are organized, they're all tagged. So there's lots of metadata tags, mm-hmm. Right the way down to who is the mortgage advisor? Well, it's Frank.
Right.
And that means then that when we're actually pushing out the channel, that channel which contains the picture of Frank and with the invitation to book a meeting with him, has got the timing on it. He's got apes, we've got the content there,
right.
shows Frank's picture, we've got the timing of when he's going to be in the branch. Mm-hmm. So when he is there, he's on
it's
the screen.
Up, yeah. That could be a monster scheduling challenge.
It could be if you weren't using tags.
Right.
I mean, if you were trying to do that without the use of metadata,
right.
you would be, for every single player
you'd
in your network,
yourself.
You'd be making, you would kill yourself, yeah.
yeah.
You would have an army of people doing it.
Right.
So you would be literally making a unique channel mm-hmm. for every single player. But actually doing it this way with our tagging system, you simply make two or three channels. Depending on effectively, each
right.
store would have screens in two or three locations. Okay, mm-hmm. So there's only two or three channels.
Right.
Everything else is just down to the initial work you do on setting up your data set with mm-hmm. your tags.
So how many branches would that be?
That's still rolling out. So we're over 100 and it's still going. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, more to do.
But it's kind of a set it and forget it thing. You set the parameters once and you're
right.
good.
Now, of course, you could start making those tags dynamic. And I think we're ready there and capable to do that in the future. When a customer wants
that.
To do it.
Yeah.
Because our players will support dynamic tagging. So in other mm-hmm. words, you can imagine, depending on some external data, we can change the tag on the player.
Mm-hmm.
And then it will it'll change its content. In fact, we're using the same idea to in QSR.
Mm-hmm.
So in QSR, of course, you've got a number of screens in a row, and if screen one were to fail, how are you going to show that menu board? Well, I mean, obviously, our content management system will realize that the system on chip screen, let's say an LG OS or a Samsung mm-hmm. Tizen, we know that the screen is failed, not just the player, but the screen. We know the full information.
Right.
So we can then sense that and then automatically re-tag a screen next door to it.
Right.
So when we change the dynamic tag on number screen number two, we can, it's then automatically picking up the content for screen one and showing it.
So can you kind of load balance it then?
Yeah, so you can put them in any groups you like,
right?
And as you wish.
So you don't have a certain set of menu selections that just aren't showing until...
Yeah, so you'd never have any, you'd always have all of your menus there, even if you start losing a screen or two.
Right.
Yeah, so you would never end up with a menu not being shown.
And if you're using dynamic data...
So it's a failover system.
You can also do dynamic scheduling based on all kinds of variables, right?
Yes.
Like back inventory, like we don't have any.
I'll give you an example of one we've done.
Yeah.
And it's obviously around about the triggering of content based on external data variables. So a company that delivers oxygen, it's a huge big container, trucks going out. And they obviously need to communicate with their drivers, and so they put in some digital signage into the tea room, the coffee room, mm-hmm. for these people. And so, as well as showing a bit of TV and entertainment and corporate information to their employees, they were also putting up warnings. So, for instance, if the temperature is falling below a certain level, they're giving the drivers warnings about the icy road conditions and things like this. Of course, we can show the right information relevant to any data set. Yeah.
But it's not a common message, like it's not going to, they schedule it in there and it's showing in September when roads aren't going to get icy.
Of course, it's only going to get triggered when an external data variable, in this case the temperature, falls to a certain point.
Yeah, corporate communications is so interesting because it seems like it's very, very busy now, but the first wave in a lot of respects seems to be all about proper office communications and a little bit of break room communications, but there's this whole wash of opportunity in manufacturing
and we're doing
facilities.
We're doing a lot in both in call center and in the factory as well. Mm. And in health and safety, actually.
Yeah.
What is the ROI? Well, the ROI is we're saving lives.
Yeah.
So we've been installed in steel mills, on oil rigs, and in mines in Poland, for example, over in US again, in manufacturing plants. And not only are you showing information to the employees about what's going on in the company, because of course these are people typically who don't have access to a PC.
They don't have a company email address.
Exactly. So the best way to reach them is, out there where they're working in the factory floor or, or even on the oil rig, as it were, and with a digital signage.
Yeah.
But not only are you doing the employee communication, you're also doing the health and safety messaging. That's very, very important to all of our clients to get that message out. Mm. But also it's about data. Mm. So it's about visualizing data. So we have a lot of customers now coming to us to say, look, we have this data in our business systems. We want to get that data out and we want to visualize that on the screen that's going to be meaningful to our employees.
Hmm.
So, that could be, how much are we producing today? What is our productivity?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any problems? Been used in call centers for years. We do call center work.
The typical call centers, it's analytics about how long people are on hold and things like that, right?
That's right. And actually, we're also seeing people go beyond just showing the data in a nice, meaningful way.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you can put the data up there as just a number. Well, that's not really very helpful.
Yeah.
If you can turn that into
a dynamic dial,
changing color for red when you've got a problem, all of these kind of things, it becomes very visual to people and they can see what's happening very quickly.
Yeah.
And that improves their productivity, their performance, and reduces your costs. So there's a great return on investment here. I mean, it really does pay for itself very quickly.
Yeah.
You're going from a position where people used to put a chart up, once a month or something, and now it's live, dynamic every day.
Yeah.
A good example was LAN Airways for us down in Chile, because we've been global for really quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And our partner down there in Chile was working with LAN Airways. The first project they had was, they said, we have a problem. We're giving our employees a PowerPoint of how they're doing every month. And it's kind of like looking backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is not really very helpful to our business. So they then put in some digital signage, and so they began to put that PowerPoint up, you know, effectively more frequently. And that was really successful. The team were being more productive. And then they went completely to the finished solution about a year later, because they could see the benefit of actually doing the live integration. So no longer is it, oh, I got to put it up once a day. It's actually, it's always live.
Right.
Yeah. So we have some dynamic HTML linking into their backend databases.
Right. So it's doing drawing live dynamic charts, bar charts and pie charts and everything else. And this is for like baggage handling, departures.
It's actually for the salespeople who are trying to make sure that they're selling their flights correctly.
Okay.
You want to make sure your planes are full.
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of important.
Not to me.
But to them it's really
important. Happy the other way, but...
So, yeah, I mean, they don't want flights going out there that
right.
have seats unfilled.
So, okay. Yeah.
It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. I hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
Talked about when Lance started hardware, software, doing your own hardware. What's the full breadth of what you guys do? Because there's this real thing within the industry of end users wanting one vendor who's going to do everything for them.
Yeah, we call that, if you like, the wrap. Yeah. So, yes, we have a monitoring capability, so where customers want us to monitor their networks for them and be proactively doing that for them, because they can do it themselves with our system,
yeah.
But if they want us to do it for them, we can. So we have a good number of clients asking us to do that. And we also have a content services company as well, OneMedia. So if they want us to, sometimes it's a one-off thing, they're asking us to build them a wayfinder, for example. Mm-hmm. So we'll do their corporate wayfinder for their building, for example, or their campus. Other times they're coming back to us and asking us to regularly provide them with content.
Mm. So creative.
Great.
Okay. And that's a subsidiary or business unit?
Sister company, yeah.
Sister, okay.
Yeah.
Do they do work for other companies as well, or it's kind of dedicated to?
It's mainly dedicated to OneMedia.
You can push them enough stuff to keep them happy.
Oh, easily. Yeah. They're expanding as well.
But you don't do installation or any of that stuff. You've got a partner channel for that?
Yeah, we've got a partner channel. So OneLand doesn't actually sell directly.
Okay.
Of course, we go through distributors and we go through the reseller integrator channel.
Mm-hmm. A number of times at the show, particularly for the many, many, many CMS startups out there, they'll ask if we can have a chat and tell me about what they're up to and so on. And many times it's come around to, so we're looking to expand, and what are your recommendations around distribution and resellers and so on? And I tell them, well, first of all, it's really hard, and you have to invest a lot of time. You mentioned you've got a global footprint. How hard is that to develop and maintain?
Well, I mean, that's been my job for the last 8 years.
So it's amazingly easy, right?
Yeah. No, I'd say it's been hard work. I've done a lot of flying
yeah.
and all over the world.
Yeah.
I mean, we're very successful now in Australia, and we've had a partner there for 7 years. In fact, our largest rollout is down in Australia with Chemist Warehouse. They're now up to nearly close to 4,000 players down there.
And what do they do?
They're a pharmacy.
Oh, okay.
Pharmacy chain. Yeah.
You say warehouse?
Chemist Warehouse.
Yeah. Oh, Chemist Warehouse. Okay,
yeah.
Well, that makes more sense.
Yeah. So, yes, I mean, supporting a customer and supporting your partners that far away is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
We do make it easy for ourselves in terms of the software we've built is pretty bulletproof, frankly.
Right.
It doesn't require a lot of support.
Mm-hmm.
So mostly it's really about training people in the correct operation of the software.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we invest in. So we go down, regularly see our partners, make sure that they're trained. And that's probably the biggest investment in building up channel and supporting channel, is making sure that, the people you're working with are, you know, fully trained and expert in what they're selling.
So how many partner / resellers do you have?
In terms of distribution, we're now distributed in only about 60 countries. Mm-hmm. Of course, North America is our biggest export market. But then it's quite close after that between Europe, Middle East, and Australia, New Zealand.
And Asia's North America is fairly recent, is it not?
Well, we were working in North America for around about 7 years, actually, under an OEM or a partnership.
Okay.
And in the last year, with new products coming in. So obviously with OneLAN adding support for the Tizen and for the WebOS system on chip solutions, and now recently for the BrightSign players, and also adding the reserve a room booking system, we have a whole plethora of product that needs to come to market that can't go to market through that original OEM relationship that I began in North America. So really, OneLAN, yes, is as OneLAN brand and Reserva brand is coming to the U.S. in the last year. Mm-hmm. So we have a sales team now, 3 people in the States.
Who are developing the channel there?
Who are developing the channel. And of course, at the beginning, what we didn't want to do is completely overwhelm ourselves. So we've been very focused about who we wanted to work with at the beginning. Mm-hmm. In terms of choosing companies who are, if you like, best of breed in their respective vertical markets, whether that's retail or it's corporate.
Yeah, I was curious about that. In developing the channel, it's very easy from what I see to get it wrong and just kind of go with the size of the company or their name or whatever without giving away your secret sauce, so to speak. What are you looking for? When do you know you've got a reseller or partner that's actually going to do something for you?
I think it's slightly different depending on the product line. So with digital signage, you really do need somebody who kind of understands what they're getting involved with. Digital signage obviously is more of a solution sell.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to have to put a lot more work into educating your customer and achieving those sales.
They're not just selling a thing.
Then, you cannot catalog sell this.
Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't really work. Not really very well. Yeah.
No.
And so from our experience, you really need to have somebody who is your ambassador, who's going to eulogize about your product internally within their own company and becomes the go-to person. Because, of course, they've all got lots of sales guys who will go out there and find opportunities, but then don't know what to say.
Right.
So, I mean, for example, our partner down in Australia, I think that the guy we have working down there, he's as expert, if not one of the best sales guys that I've got, whether it's inside the OneLAN team or inside a partner. He's he's a very good guy. He's extremely expert, and he only deals with our product. Mm-hmm. So that's what he does day and night, as it were.
And is that pretty important that if you're going to have a reseller, you don't want a company that also has four other lines?
I think that's important for the distributor. I think the resellers, of course, they're very much more project-driven.
Right.
Of course, there are some specialist resellers focusing on digital signage, but your average reseller, he's got a huge number of range of projects to deliver, and he's not going to invest necessarily in having an expert in digital signage on his team. Some do, but a lot won't. So that would then put the call back on our partner, the distributor, or on us to help them. So we do get very involved, not just with our distributors, but also with our resellers and supporting them in their client presentations.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly for the bigger deals, we're there.
Right. So are you still manufacturing OneLAN boxes? I'm looking at one here.
You're looking at one here?
Yeah.
That's right. Yes, we are. But I think it's fair to say that we, as a company, are number one a software company.
Yeah.
And that's where our value really is. And yes, we do manufacture our Linux player, which is very high reliability, and just talking back about Dubai Duty Free.
Yeah.
The reason why it was selected by them was because of that extreme reliability that we're achieving. They rejected all Windows players because they weren't reliable enough.
Yeah.
And they didn't. It wasn't just something that they guessed about. They sat down and they tested them all, extended testing. And so we, with a Linux player, we're parsing all those tests.
Right.
Their other requirement was pretty much zero maintenance. I mean, the airport is open 24 hours a day. It's advertising 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
It doesn't close. They're advertising.
Some of the busiest times are in the middle of the night, right?
Exactly. Some of the busiest times are in the middle of the night. So their requirement on us was, well, we need a player that's going to operate for like 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, you know, and not fail.
Yeah.
And not need maintenance.
Yeah.
And, we own the whole stack. So that means, we have complete control. We're not, if any software updates, it's, the decision of them whether they do the software update or not.
So I didn't
write... you don't need to do their software
yeah.
update. So that means there's no need to have a downtime
right.
for maintenance. I mean, mm-hmm. so they just have been running now for 3.5-4 years.
Right.
Continually.
So adding a BrightSign box makes some sense because it also has great reputation for high
exactly.
reliability.
So, I mean, there's a good reason why OneLAN has also chosen to partner with BrightSign going
yeah.
forward, and that is because, like us, they provide a solution which is, rugged, reliable, and can just keep working.
Right.
We would not want to partner with somebody who couldn't achieve our level and our expectations.
Some odd sounding name in Shenzhen.
Yeah. So I think just to address that a little bit, why is OneLAN partnering with BrightSign as well as might be seen as a little odd because we have our own players. Our own players are based on Intel architecture. That gives us lots of processing power and it gives us the capability within our software to do a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of our APIs, in terms of a local user interface, in terms of integrations and all these kind of things. So it becomes a very fully featured player. A bit more, shall we say, a premium player that's going to be great in an airport
right.
or for a high reliability situation, but also going to be great for corporate where they want to do some of the things we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
In terms of targeted information and data and all this kind of stuff. But there is another situation where we're into more of a retail place or a QSR place, and we've seen that there's great downward pressure on price in those markets.
Yes.
And of course, we kind of foreseen this, I think, really about 4 or 5 years ago, that, the chip that we were starting to see in our mobile phone that was going to bring, multimedia phones to the market is going to end up in side screens. And sure enough, we now have ARM chips inside screens. And that's what, we're now under a generation that is, I think, fully formed. Mm-hmm. The first generation that we were seeing of, for instance, the Samsung SSP, we didn't release a product.
Pretty
feeble. We developed on it, but we didn't release it. We weren't happy
that
was going to be good enough with our software. But it didn't mean we weren't working on it. And we do think that does for, a lot of customers give the right solution. The quality, the reliability, in fact, is there now. Now we're on the sort of third, fourth generations. We're very pleased with it.
But it is a bit of a finger-crossing exercise that you surrender control somewhat of the
of
the
course,
stack.
Yeah, you are now on top of their operating system. But we've been working very, very closely with these guys over the last 2 years. And, of course, we've got full knowledge not only of the player, how that's functioning, but also of the screen. So, actually, there's a real benefit to the customer now. Because it used to be that everyone could say, well, the screen, we know the player's working, but, the screen, we're not sure. Maybe somebody changed the input on the screen and it's on the wrong input, right? So it's not showing the content from the player.
So do you think system on chip is going to largely take over?
I think it is going to be, over time, a case where it gets better and better and better. Yeah, so what's built into the screen is going to become more and more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of applications, it's going to fit the bill.
Yeah.
So particularly for retail and QSR and all these kind of applications, it's not like you're doing crazy amounts of content on one screen. Mm-hmm. It's much more simple content.
And the hardware and developer guys at the big Korean companies and elsewhere, they are. My experience was when they started doing this, they really didn't understand the digital signage business. They just sold panels, and they needed to listen. And they've had Samsung at least has had 4 years at this now. Do you get a sense that they really get this and understand they need to listen to you guys?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we speak very regularly with them, and we focus on key target customers together as
right.
well. So we're kind of going through the door together quite often now, rather than, you know, it being a sort of separate thing where, you know, it's just us on our own. No, quite often it's the two companies looking at customer and
side calls. How large is OneLine in terms of headcount?
We are 45 people, and then we have...
Outside of London, right? West of London?
So we have, at the moment, three people in the US, and we're looking to increase that team size this year to around about five. And then in China, we have two, because we also service the Asia market, of course. And then in Dubai, we have a sales office there with one person, and in Germany, we have two people.
And everybody else is in...
Everyone else is in Henley-on-Thames,
In the same neighborhood.
Very nice part of the world,
Same neighborhood as Adrian Cotterill.
Absolutely, that's quite right.
Can you hear him?
Well, we do bump into each other, yes.
And is the company privately held or public?
No, we're a privately held company. I'm one of the shareholders. And you know, we've never had to go out and borrow any money, I'm very pleased to say.
Yeah, we've obviously
been
profitable.
We've always been profitable, self-funded. And enjoy very strong growth.
There's a lot of companies in the space who are not profitable. There are companies like Real Digital Media who looked at the situation. We're kind of going along, doing their thing, but they realize if we really want to grow, if we really want to do what we need to do, we need to either get venture capital in or be acquired by somebody else and acquired in a good way. I've spoken with some companies this week who've certainly not talked about selling, but more so about acquisition and perhaps going out and looking at other companies. I realize you can't say, here's what we're doing, but is that something you guys are thinking about?
Of course, you know, it's on my radar that, you know, if I want to strengthen our presence in somewhere like the States, that's always one option, is to find a suitable company to partner with, take over or partner. But, you know, nobody on the horizon right now that I have on my list. But, it's a valid way of looking at doing it.
What
at
is
the moment, though, we're just going for hiring the right people and making the right relationships.
Yeah, well, and the unfortunate part, I suppose, about consolidation and just natural thinning out of the herd, so to speak, is you're going to have some good people come available, whether they like it or not.
Absolutely, that's right.
So what does the next year look like?
Very exciting. This year has got off to a cracking start. We had a very large order for our Reserva panel right at the beginning of the year, going into an insurance company. So it was about 300 of those going out.
Meeting room signs.
Meeting room signs. 300 meeting room signs. That was pretty much kicking our year off.
I call that the gateway drug. Is that correct?
I loved that comment. We agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
You know, it's a... It's a much easier sell, of course, than digital signage.
Sure.
When you asked that question earlier on. And actually, if you look at some partners, giving them room booking is a very easy sale for them. And it doesn't require a lot of training. And
you're not selling the dreamy. You're just fixing a problem.
It's more of a run rate product.
Yeah.
And it can kind of be sold off the page. So it's a kind of a different route to market for us in some ways there. We're even looking at furniture companies, you know, to be selling Reserva. Office refit companies as well.
Interesting.
So some other channels other than just the AV channel that are very interested in Reserva right now.
You could feel, in cubicle office spaces, all those dividers and everything, they could have a screen built right into them. So this is Bob's desk this week.
Yeah, so we're seeing massive opportunity there. It's got the tiger by the tail, I think, a little bit. You know, we had massive growth last year. We're going to more than double this year.
Nice.
And it's back to our early heady days of digital signage where we were growing every year 100% at the beginning. And I think that's where we are right now with Reserva. And actually, it's only going to help us build digital signage sales. Of course, you can use a Reserva completely on its own, just buy one screen for your one meeting room. But of course, we also scale up enterprise.
Yeah.
I mentioned that customer there with 300. That's an enterprise integration where we're working with NFS Hospitality. So it's not a Google calendar or an Exchange calendar. They wanted to do more. It's a proper 300 meeting room, you know, large organization where they needed to be, you know, doing things like catering and, you know, different room layouts. You know, we want the chairs put in the theater style for this meeting or whatever. And so we work with NFS Hospitality, it's a UK company. We just announced that partnership here at ISE. And so that project that I've just discussed there is going in with them. And also as part of that, we're going to be adding check-in using the NFC reader as well, so people can actually
Yeah.
Do the check-in.
The meeting room science thing is great, but it's already starting to mature somewhat. And if all you can do is display an Exchange server, the calendar for the room, there's a whole bunch of companies that can do that.
That's the vanilla, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the mere starting point.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly our ambitions are way beyond that. Some things we've already recently added is, we've got 13 languages in there now. Of course, one land sells globally, so that was very much an early call from our partners. We need more languages. And we can show more than one of those languages at a time. So, for instance, if you've got an office in Switzerland, you're going to need to show more than one language, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to need to be showing the meeting in German and in French.
Right.
And maybe even Italian. Mm. And maybe English. So that's, again, a very well-received feature. Obviously, the room summary as well, because that we provide that on our digital signage, is that ability to show the room summary information. Mm. Again, a lot of the competitors wouldn't be doing that yet.
Yeah.
But actually, pretty much every single one of our clients has been saying, well, actually, yeah, we do have a reception area, and we need to show...
who's where.
Who's where. Yeah. And that wayfinding that comes from that, of course, is vital to them. Mm. And going beyond that, of course, everybody wants their logo on the screen. I know it sounds really simple, but it's my screen and my company, and I want my logo up there and my branding on the screen. So we've added support for them to be able to do that by themselves, to change the look and feel of the screen to match their branding, their corporate guidelines.
Mm. Okay.
It's good.
Good. Thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure to see you.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net, every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 16.9 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 16.9 the blog and now the podcast are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.